Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
A bump in the night. Your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed, you'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinisterhood.
I'm gonna kill you.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Freaky Friday, where we tell your odd but true stories. It is Friday, July 3rd. The day that Independence Day is observed in the United States, even though the 4th is really Independence Day. But hopefully, if you're here in the U.S., you're getting the day off. And may all of our 4th of July dreams come true this weekend, whatever that means to you. I hope the whatever you envision as a true thing to celebrate for us here in the United States, I hope that thing happens and that we can all celebrate it and that you are safe and happy wherever you are at. We are bringing you a lineup of 6 odd but true tales that we have shared with you throughout the past 200 and plus episodes of Freaky Friday. I chose these stories. I'm just going to give you a little behind the scenes. I literally chose stories that had to either do with someone who is serving our country, like the first story, even though they were subject to an extremely unfortunate incident, or someone who served the country whose proud daughter wrote in to tell us about all the awesome things they did, or who their sibling wrote in the third story to tell about what they do, as well as things that just perhaps are spooky and happened to someone on a military base or to someone who serves our country or is deployed. And the last one, it's just a silly one, and it happened in the month of July. So that's how I picked it. So hopefully you will enjoy my lineup. Christy usually gets to, I mean, in fact, every week, Christy reads all of your stories, and then she chooses them, puts them in a wonderful order. So it's always fun on a best of when you get a Heather's mix. So please enjoy Heather's mix of tangentially related things to July/July 4th. I hope it's everything you ever dreamed of and you enjoy it wherever you're at with your families. Thank you so very much for being with us here today and enjoy our lineup. Let's get freaky, as we say.
Well, this first one is jaw-dropping.
It will haunt my nightmares for sure. I mean, it's
this
just...
This one is... We've been holding this one for a while because it came with a disclaimer to read after a certain date because the trial for this case has since begun. So I've been sitting on this and now it's time. So
it is a wild one, and brace yourselves.
Well, I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get freaky. This first one is from Megan and it is called Tinder Terror / Lady Dahmer. My friend is a police officer and told me of a very strange call that he responded to. The call from dispatch came in on a deadline with a male and female voice in the background. Since those can often indicate very serious calls, such as kidnapping or domestic violence, the PD triangulated the call to a local apartment complex, and my friend and one other car were dispatched to the scene. Upon arrival, there was nothing amiss in this complex. Things seemed very usual for around 6 p.m. at night. My friend and his partner started knocking on doors to check if anyone had heard a disturbance. A while later, a naked, bloody man ran through the parking lot being chased by a female. My friend and his partner immediately responded. My friend recognized that the man was losing a lot of blood and fast. He needed an ambulance because of a cut artery. While he tended to the man's wound, he asked the man to tell him what had happened. The man immediately began relaying how he had swiped right on this girl on Tinder, and she wanted to meet at her apartment for lunch and, well, a hookup. The guy accepted and met her at the apartment. He said they ordered lunch and started getting intimate. After a while, the woman started to tape his legs and arms with duct tape, which he thought was strange, but brushed it off as a kink and let her do her thing. She then pulled a knife from her kitchen and started to stab and cut him, telling him in a scary, sweet voice that she wanted to see his organs and cuddle with his heart. After a while, she got upset that the man was bleeding on her sheets and furniture and made him walk to the bathtub where she cuddled him while he still bled. She ordered some DoorDash and told the victim not to scream or she would kill him. After a while, she moved him back to the bed and fell asleep. While she napped, the man tried to grab the knife and cut himself free. It turns out that he was a soldier stationed at a local military base and felt that if he could get the knife, he could defend himself and leave. But the knife was too difficult to get at the time. Instead, he was able to reach her phone. He dialed 911, but left the line dead to not wake the girl up. But she did wake up, hung up the line, and berated the man for calling. She then answered the phone when dispatch called back, told them all was fine, and then hung up. She fell back asleep, and the man was finally able to get the knife. Somehow he ended up being able to cut his legs free and flee the apartment, leaving his clothes behind and knocking over some furniture as he raced for his life. He had been held at her apartment, bleeding, for over 5 hours. The girl woke up and began to chase him until she was apprehended by police. She refused to give a statement and immediately lawyered up. This story made headline news, but the media focused on the DoorDash piece and neglected the very strange bits of the story. My friend stated that the man was distraught and was absolutely traumatized from the incident, understandably so. But the girl remained cold, her facial expression unmoving. Her trial is coming up this month, so hopefully by the time you read this, the plethora of evidence found by officers will be used to find her guilty of kidnapping and other charges. You can read more from the news in the links I've included, as well as the probable cause affidavit. Officers said the girl's apartment, having been searched upon a lawful warrant being obtained, was extremely messy. And later, one officer retorted that, if the apartment isn't clean, she doesn't get the peen. Which is definitely a way to remember that a lack of hygiene in someone you date could be a red flag. I wanted to share this to point out how men can also be subjected to dating violence, and they too need to exercise caution with how and when and who they meet on Tinder, i.e. meeting in a public place and not a personal apartment, and to watch out for red flags and behavior as well. My friend said that lots of men aren't as cued into dating safety as women are, but it's important for all, regardless of gender. Thank you, ladies. I love the show.
Well, this probable cause affidavit is horrifying, and it's pretty much lays out exactly what was said here, but the extreme, I mean, just the, it's macabre. She really did tie him up and take him to the bathtub and having blood on her arms and hands. I don't think there's a question that that's what happened, you know, given that he ran out, you know, and he was cut and she was not. And there was a knife found next to her bed. She was covered in dried blood when she came out. And that's so eerie, too, to know that she's ordered DoorDash. So there is a person, you know, within shouting distance, but you've been threatened, you know, if you make any sounds, I'll kill you, which is a menacing, a class 5 felony. She got charged with false imprisonment, 2 different assaults and second degree kidnapping. You know, you can't tie someone up and tell them they can't leave. That's kidnapping.
Yeah, no, you sure can't. And even if, you know, there's a DoorDash driver, if you've already been tortured
cut,
and you know that she's capable of that, I mean, who's to say you yell and now the DoorDash driver is also in danger and there's 2 victims. So I'm glad that even though he didn't yell out then, he was still able to get away and use smart thinking to kind of get tracked. It is very reminiscent for several reasons about Dahmer, but specifically because the cops found that one guy running down the street naked that had escaped. And very unfortunately, Jeffrey Dahmer was able to convince them that he was drunk and it was just a fight. And they let him go back to the apartment and he was killed. Mm-hmm. So good for your friend and the other officer for, I mean, clearly recognizing that, oh, this guy is very much in distress. But what a horrifying scene to come upon, even as a seasoned cop. And then you're talking to the person and they just have zero emotion about what's going down.
Yeah, just that like eerie blank face and smart on the victim's part to call 911, even if he couldn't make contact with the dispatcher because, like, you know, protocol being that they respond to those calls, that's awesome because it could be a situation like this. But it did say in the affidavit that the dispatcher overheard him say, because you cut me and also you're going to kill me. So kind
on
of
the phone?
On the phone, not to the dispatcher, but to the other person. So that way the dispatcher's like, there's something violent going on. So just whatever you can to call that number and be able to convey. It's there was a famous, not famous, but a viral TikTok that went around that was a woman that had been kidnapped and she just said, oh, let me call my sister.
Oh, so, yeah, I've seen it.
And then it's the 911 person going, are you okay? Like, wait a minute. And just like that, the dispatcher going, I'm going to leave this line open and see what I can figure out. So,
yeah.
But I think the message here is a good one of don't meet for the first time in somebody's apartment. You just never know. And it being tied up, and that's one kind of a kink thing, but the duct tape where you can't really get it off and you're vulnerable and you don't know this person, making sure that anytime I went to meet at somebody's house, I would always say, hey, I'm going to go to this person's house. Here's their what I know about them, their profile, their name, their address. And if I don't call you in 30 minutes, you know, come get me kind of thing, which sounds too much, but it might not be too much just to have people know where you're at.
I don't think it's
too much.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I don't think I ever met someone for the first time by going to their place.
I have not, but I know people who have used dating apps, and it is prevalent to match on the app and then say, you know, hey, come over and let's hook up.
Oh,
and
yeah,
I remember
for
going,
sure.
I'm like, the first time you met this guy was like going over and hooking up at his house. And my friend was like, yeah, I'm really lucky nothing happened. I'm like, well,
I mean, I'm not saying I haven't met somebody for the first time that night hooked up, but it was like, oh, maybe you talked to him for a little bit at a bar or something. Still not smart. I still don't know that person. You know, I mean, we all exercise more caution with these things now.
Yeah,
it's wild that I just clicked on some of these links and I didn't realize how young they were. She was 22 and he was 21.
Yeah.
Or reversed. No, wait, that is, yes. Yeah. He was 21, she was 22. Man.
And yeah, he's not identified anywhere, which good for him, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know that I would want especially if you're in the military. I don't know if you want that going around everywhere. So, important thing is, at least he's alive, but what a traumatic thing. You will have to definitely seek therapy for.
And I'm glad he's alive and she was arrested, and it wasn't just, like you said, the cops go, oh, well, it was just we just had a disagreement, or she seemed, you know, she wasn't freaking out, so we just let her go. It's like, no, you're going down. You can't tie someone up in your house.
No, especially when there's like obvious stab wounds. So,
no, fully going to trial and going away, hopefully.
Yes, yeah, well, hopefully. Well, thank you so much for sending that in.
Sinisterhood, we'll be right back. I'll tell you what, my husband loves bread. He loves tortillas. He loves bagels. He also is thoughtful about his fiber intake, how many carbohydrates he's, you know, just being mindful of the whole list of things that you input into your body and wanting to have a nice mix of them and feel good about your health goals. And the thing about Hero Bread is your hero, because you don't have to eat garbage bread that tastes like cardboard in order to meet those health goals. With Hero Bread, you can focus on them goals, but still indulge in the good stuff, baby. The soft, fluffy experience that you love in a breakfast wrap, avocado toast, grilled cheese with soup, family burger nights on fluffy, delicious hamburger buns. Hero's products are delicious and flavorful, but have ultra low net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and they're high in fiber. I know Christy loves a bagel sandwich with a scrambled egg and cheese. Paris loves bagels with a cream cheese schmear, and maybe some, like, you know, put a veggie smear on it too. It's the thing about the Hero Bagels is you don't know that it's 0 to 5 grams of net carbs and 11 to 32 grams of fiber from the texture. You're getting the soft experience you know and love, whether you're packing some fresh wraps where you're toasting up to 19 gram protein breakfast bagel. All of your favorite recipes are covered with Hero's sliced bread loaves, their tortillas, their bagels, their noodles. They even have noodles, you guys. Small batch drops of indulgent flavors like the popular 2 gram net carb Hero croissant and a 3 gram net carb Hero pain au chocolat. Man, that's the good stuff, baby. Get it from Hero. Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code creepy at checkout. That's creepy at hero.co.
Well, continuing on with amazing family members that have done hard but incredibly important things, this next one is from Elizabeth Ryan, and it's called My Dad, the Nazi Hunter. I have previously appeared on Freaky Friday about growing up in the world's most boring haunted house. This is a story of a different kind of freaky. This is a story of how my dad hunted down Nazi war criminals. My father, Alan Ryan, was brilliant. He skipped multiple grades in school, was top of his class at Dartmouth, editor of the Law Review, a U.S. Supreme Court clerk for Justice White, a captain in the Marines, and an assistant solicitor general in front of the Supreme Court. Then, at the age of just 35, in 1980, the same year I was born, he was appointed to head up the brand new Office of Special Investigations at the U.S. Department of Justice. His mission was to find and prosecute Nazi war criminals living in America. After the end of World War II, thousands of Nazi collaborators fled to the United States, obscuring their identities and claiming to seek freedom from the threat of communism abroad. Many of them settled across the country, living unobtrusive lives and seeming to be just average post-war immigrants with normal jobs and families. In reality, they had been planners of the Holocaust, concentration camp guards, and gas chamber operators. They included people like Fyodor Fedorenko, a Russian guard at the Treblinka concentration camp, where he beat, whipped, and shot hundreds of prisoners, even as they were marched into the gas chambers. After the war, he abandoned his family, settled in Connecticut, and worked in a factory until his true identity became known. Of course, the United States had no jurisdiction to prosecute these war criminals for the actual atrocities they had carried out in Europe, but it could prosecute them based on the lies they told on their immigration papers to cover up their identities, jobs, locations, and crimes. And that could get them deported from the United States and back to, hopefully, face justice abroad. So that's what my dad did. He tirelessly worked to find these men, prove their identities, expose their roles in the Holocaust and the Nazi regime, and get them out of the United States, where they had managed to hide for decades. He exposed their horrific actions, their active or complicit participation in the slaughter of 6 million Jews and others, and their deliberate dishonesty that allowed them to slip under the radar and become our quiet neighbors, which is what my dad later entitled the book he wrote about his work. He even uncovered that the United States had actively protected a Nazi officer named Klaus Barbie, who earned the nickname the Butcher of Lyon because of his horrific torture of prisoners in France. He was personally responsible for deporting more than 15,000 people to concentration camps. But after the war, the U.S. helped him hide in South America with full knowledge of his atrocities and even made him a counterintelligence agent. 40 years later, my father refused to keep that fact quiet and made a public report to Congress that, quote, officers of the United States government were directly responsible for protecting a person wanted by the government of France on criminal charges and in arranging his escape from the law. The United States was forced to officially apologize to France for its own active participation in delaying justice for decades. After a few years, my father left the Office of Special Investigations because he wanted to raise me and my brother in his home state of Massachusetts. But he continued his work on the laws of war, genocide, war crimes, and justice by teaching college and law school classes and writing books. He was even invited to Rwanda to advise the government in the aftermath of the genocide there. And he did not spare the United States from criticism when he saw what he believed were violations of the laws of war, especially in the all-encompassing war on terror. He would be horrified and heartbroken to see the state of the United States today and its descent into a place that ignores the rule of law and embraces outright Nazism. My dad passed away suddenly and unexpectedly in January of 2023 at the age of 77. It was the worst and most painful day of my life, and I am often still crippled by grief in his absence. The Washington Post, Boston Globe, and New York Times all wrote obituaries for him, all of them highlighting him as the man who hunted down Nazis living in America. A well-known journalist is even writing a graphic novel based on his refusal to allow the U.S. to evade accountability for its role in protecting and hiding Klaus Barbie. My dad was an incredible and brilliant lawyer, teacher, and person, but he was also the best father I could have ever hoped for. I am proud of him for his unwavering dedication to justice, and I continue to try to honor his life and legacy with my own career as a lawyer focused on gun violence prevention policy in the United States. After he died, one of his colleagues said, "Alan Ryan saw wrong in the world and tried to right it. And I hope that I can continue to honor his memory by doing the same."
Well, Elizabeth, I am definitely crying. That's so sweet that someone would not only say that about him after his death, but that you are now a living embodiment of your dad's legacy of seeing wrong in the world, seeing the number one danger to kids. And that's what you focused your career on.
What a beautiful tribute from you and from the publications as well.
Yeah.
She sent some links and some pictures of your dad who, some people you can just look at them and tell that they just have like a good soul.
Uh-huh.
And that's the feeling I get looking at your dad, like the warm and kind eyes, but he looks like he's also smart as a whip.
Yeah.
And your mom was a hottie in whatever picture this is taken. Both your parents back in the day, look at those two little hotties.
Hell yeah, they're rocking the 70s. But for sure, I mean, he's like the type of guy that you would want to sit. I mean, it looks like one of these pictures, he's in a booth, like sit across from him in the booth and just be like, okay, tell me everything.
The professor everyone would want to have.
Absolutely. And I think this understanding that our current listener, her father's career, which was not that long ago, was to hunt down Nazis who had killed as many people as this Klaus Barbie had and others, and to get them out of the country and to see where we, like she said, it's like horrific. And the same with, I was just thinking this during after we read the last one, Paris's grandpa's barn got burned down by the Klan. Like, it's not like these are like, well, bad things happened a long time ago.
Hundreds and hundreds of years ago.
Yeah, Ruby Bridges is still alive.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They're still alive. And so, like, the people that he was hunting, like, the fact that that was not, I mean, it's in within Elizabeth's lifetime, like, to remember that happening, that's why we love to share stories like you guys. And that's why we're like, go ask your family if you got stories like this. Because I'm so happy to know that Alan Ryan existed. I love that we get to, like, you know, add him to the pantheon of badass people that by association we now get to know and share their story. So thank you, Elizabeth, and look at your sweet dad.
May we all be more like Alan Ryan, but also like you, Elizabeth, because you are carrying on his work. And I know that he would be upset about the state of the U.S., but very proud of you and what you're doing.
Most definitely. Thank you. Thank you. Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Your daughter's on a roll because this next one is also from Anonymous.
It's my babies keeping their eyes on the skies.
Speaking of siloing, this one dovetails nicely. It is called My Nuclear Radiation Chemist Sibling for the U.S. Government, Immaculate Constellation. Hello, amazing, smart, ambitious, empathetic, beautiful ladies. Anonymous here, using a throwaway account and providing just enough information to be understandable, but hopefully not enough for my sibling and their spouse to be identified. My story, or better, my sibling and their spouse's story, further prove how the government purposely keeps employees and the public in the dark about all matters related to this world and possibly other worlds by siloing information so no one person has enough info to form a whole picture. To start, my sibling is an inorganic chemist at a government-contracted lab who performs nuclear radiation testing on various sites throughout the world. My sibling's spouse flies aircraft. A bit of quick background first. My sibling and their spouse have been members of the military and subsequent employees of the U.S. government for 14 and 17 years, respectively. They have never been able to fully share what their careers have been since joining the military. Since being honorably discharged from the military, they both continue to work government-contracted jobs that I am still not fully allowed to know about. They have completed stints in Nevada, where my sibling's spouse, no matter how many times me and my other siblings asked, was not allowed to confirm nor deny where he worked. The spouse would be gone for days at a time, with not even my sibling knowing where they were. My sibling, who worked at an adjacent military base at the time, talked about how them, my sibling, and their coworkers were, quote, prepped when the internet craze of storming Area 51 went down. No matter how much the military, government, media brushed it off and called the people crazy or jokesters or internet fame seekers, the military did indeed take it very seriously behind closed doors. My sibling talked about how grateful they were that nobody actually stormed Area 51, stating, quote, they wouldn't have gotten 5 feet beyond the base's border before they were taken out. My sibling's spouse was assigned to practice, quote, flight maneuvers that day. Fast forward to my sibling's government contracted job. As I said in the beginning, they are inorganic chemists whose job it is to analyze inorganic matter samples sent in from all around the world to determine if the samples show evidence of nuclear activity. This is a way for the government to keep tabs on which countries in the world may be trying to conceal nuclear weapons, creation, and testing. My sibling never knows where these samples come from, as yet another government-contracted company is used. They come in with the serial number. They test them. They get sent back with the results. They are not allowed to ask any identifying information about said samples. Their phone gets locked away every day before they enter the facility, and everything, notes, books, laptops, paperwork, sticky notes, are left at work. They get searched upon leaving. To make matters even more interesting, my sibling works with organic analysis chemists who are sent unidentified organic matter samples, run tests on them to see what the breakdown of the matter is, and send it back out. These samples come in from a government-contracted company, are only identified again by serial numbers, and no questions are ever asked by the employees. Ever. Anyways, hope this makes sense, and while it's not anything wild and crazy in terms of confirming UAPs and whatnot, it's wild in its own way, and is my personal brush with how crazy secretive and the lengths the government will go to keep all possible parties with as limited information as possible. Love y'all.
Well, yeah, I think this is firsthand what it's like in a contractor is helping a contractor. It's like all these different, I won't say shell organizations, because I think they are different, like legit companies, but specifically they all kind of answer to the same boss, which is Uncle Sam.
And they also all get just little tidbits of information, like Anonymous was saying. So no one person has a complete picture. It's like if you were given a puzzle and 70% of the pieces are gone, you're like, well, looks cool, but I don't really know what the rest of it looks like. And then all the other agencies have like their own little puzzle. Nobody's got the complete one. Somebody does. Somebody does.
You know who
there's
else?
There's a handful of people that know what the hell's going on, I assume.
And it's they're in a building that's shaped like a shape. It's called a Pentagon. But you know who else operated the same way that the U.S. government and the Pentagon does is H.H. Holmes, the serial killer. He didn't want one architect to know all of the plans for his murder castle. So they had one part work on this part, one person work on this part, one person work on this part. So that way, no one, they're like, where does this tunnel go? And it's like, don't worry about it. And then the other person's like, there's a tunnel that's leading to an incinerator. What's that for? And it's like, I throw garbage in it. And it's like, is that what's at the top of the tunnel? It's like, you don't need to see the top of the tunnel.
Yeah. And how'd that work out?
Yeah. It turns out he's a mass murderer. So I mean, yeah. The shit fits, as they say.
Yeah.
If the shit fits. What a cool, though, mysterious job to study inorganic materials. It's like, tell us what this is.
No, seriously. This is, man, it takes a strong person to be able to have a job like this that can keep their mouth shut. Because after enough pressuring, there's a good chance I'm like, okay, fine. Here's what happened.
But right, also, I don't know. Not to tell.
I feel like they're probably borderline, like, not threatened, but maybe, and have to sign a ton of shit and like one slip up and your whole career is done. So there's a lot of incentive to say nothing.
Right. And it's like, if your whole career is done, depending on who you explain it to, because it also might be that they then put you in the penitentiary and or execute you. So the Espionage Act, stuff like that.
Mental health institution. Yeah. They're crazy. They don't know what they're talking about.
They made it all up. So good on your sibling and their spouse for being able to keep it reasonably anonymous. But also, I mean, it's your sibling. They drop enough breadcrumbs. You're like, I'm putting the pieces together. But still, you only have the tiny little part of the puzzle.
I've known you since birth. I'm going to figure this out.
I don't fucking know.
Yeah, it would be hard to have a spouse in this if you were not also in it. I think if you're both like, we both get it. We can't tell each other where we're going. If Tommy was just like, I'll be gone for 5 days, can't know where I am, I'd be like, no.
Actually, I absolutely have to know where you are right now.
That's okay. You can tell me. I won't tell anybody else, but I do need to know.
Yeah, I can't just be like, I'm going to whisk away for 48 hours this weekend. Don't worry about it. Don't ask questions. I would absolutely need answers, but thank you for sharing that. I love insights like this of like what it's really like.
Yeah, and also, it shows you that a lot of stuff goes on that, I mean, when it's pointed out to you, you're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense that they would be testing all this stuff. Mm-hmm. But maybe we don't just think about it just, you know, on a normal day. But then when I do start to think about it, I'm like, what other departments are in there? Who else is testing what? There's all sorts of things in there. Where are the tunnels that only certain people get access to?
The secret tunnels, or like Fort Detrick, which allegedly is where there are non-human biologics. But even if there's not, there's like a sample from every infectious disease ever. And I'm like, places like that scare the shit out of me.
Yeah. Just one person drops a petri dish and we're all done. So
I can't keep my phone in my hand for 5 seconds, much less like this. If this falls and bursts, it will create a gas that envelops the earth. And I'm like, don't put it in my hand, baby. Butterfingers McKinney. No.
Oh, man. Well, thank you, Anonymous, for sending that in. And do you have any other stories that your sibling or their spouse are able to kind of tell, but not really tell, send them in. I love stuff like that.
Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
By law, 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Well, this next one is from Nicole, and the subject line is possessed roommate. Hi, ladies. I love the pod so much, and I'm so thankful to have you all to keep me and my doggo, Tut, company on our daily walks. I'm trying to secure tickets for the tour when you come to Columbus soon. With that, let's get into it. So this story is about my best friend and current roommate, Rachel. She and I have been besties since freshman year of college when all of this went down. We went to school at Eastern Kentucky University, and there wasn't always a ton to do. So for a little while, we were really into going to haunted places and looking for ghosts. One of those places was Whitehall Mansion, about 20 minutes down the road. So one night, we decide to go to Whitehall and try to spot some Civil War ghosts. 11 of us pile into 2 vehicles, and we go to the mansion. It's pretty tame and everyone's joking around and being goofy, and honestly, none of us really believe anything will happen. That's when Rachel decides to taunt the spirits. She said she didn't believe in them and said a bunch of different taunts to bring out the ghosts. While we were wandering the grounds, Rachel accuses one of our friends of blowing on her neck when he was a good 20 feet away from her. She then tells me her back is hurting, and I check for any marks, but I don't see anything. So with nothing really happening, we decide to move on.
There's an old Civil War cemetery about 20 more minutes away, and we decide that's our next location. We stop at a gas station, and because Rachel's back is still bothering her, I check it. This time, I see long scratch marks down her lower back. Lots of them, at least 20, and they're bright red. I tell her she's probably having an allergic reaction, and we get back into the car and go to the cemetery. It's at this point that everything shifts. Rachel grows quiet quickly, something unusual for her. Her eyes go blank and she just stares out the window and doesn't join in the conversation. She's not that person. Rachel is a big personality who's always laughing and talking and gesticulating. To see her so quiet was eerie. And whenever we would ask her about her back, all she would say is, "I'm fine," in a monotone voice. It was chilling. We park at a one-room church, the kind that looks straight out of The Patriot. It has white slats with a single steeple, and there's no one in the gravel driveway except us. At this point, it's closing in on 2 a.m., and we have to be careful, more so for property owners who shoot you for trespassing than anything else. So we hop out of the car and start towards the cemetery. It's a ways down the road, and we're all laughing in hushed whispers as we walk, all except Rachel. She's dragging her feet and barely walking, and her face is still utterly blank. When we get to the cemetery, there's a small ditch to cross, and then we're in tall grass up to our knees. We peer at a few headstones, and then suddenly, an awful chorus of coyotes start. There had to have been at least 20 in the pack, and we all panic and start for the road. Everyone else is running, but me and my other friend Sherry are trying to get Rachel to move. She's still walking, slowly, and seem ignorant to everyone else's rushing. Then, as if snapping out of a trance, Rachel doubles over, elbows on knees and head in hand, and starts bawling. She says she doesn't know where she is or what's going on, and she wants to go home. We rush down the road, and it's like you could see the struggle, and the light was gone again. She wasn't crying, wasn't showing emotion. She was blank. Sherry and I panic and get her into the car. We rush to Waffle House, as one does in Kentucky at 3 a.m., and hurry out of the car. And Rachel seems to be more aware. Cameron, my ex, who was in the car with us, asks about her back. She snaps, "I'm fine, just leave me alone," and turns away. It's probably just a rash or irritation, he tried to rationalize. It's the tipping point. She starts screaming at him about how he does not know what he's talking about, and it's definitely not just a rash. We get into Waffle House and sit down, and everything clicks back to normal. Rachel looks at us all with a grin. "So when are we going to the creepy cemetery?" I tell her, since it's so late, we decided to skip it. She looks confused and glances at her phone. "Oh, damn. When did it get to be 3 a.m.? Last I remember, it was 12. To this day, Rachel has no memories of the cemetery or of a lot of parts of the night. She does have a recurring dream, though, even 10 years later. And in that dream, the exact events of the cemetery happen. She always wakes up sobbing. Sometimes the scratch marks even come back. Thanks for reading, Nicole.
Oh, Rachel.
Go out with your friends. And
possessed by a demon.
you think, well, the worst case scenario of what's going to happen to my lower back will be, you know, I get a tattoo down there and then we go to the Waffle House and talk about it. Not a ghoulish entity will attach to me at this creepy place and follow me to its cemetery.
And then bounced at Waffle House. Rude. First of all, must be an IHOP fan. Like, rude. I will never.
Right? He was like, I don't do Waffle House.
I don't
all
do
right.
Waffle House.
Snobby ghost, I guess.
What was the one we would always go to in Fort Worth? Oh, my gosh.
Oh, y'all had the kettle?
Do you remember the
back
kettle?
In the day. They don't have them anymore. I just remember we never went to the kettle because my family thought I was too rich.
Well, these were, I promise you, at 2 a.m.,
no.
It's an equalizer. There's all walks of life there.
IHOP was honestly fancy for us when we were kids, too.
IHOP's great, too. I think this is a lesson learned for all of us, and that's fuck around and find out.
Honestly,
don't taunt the ghost.
The only person who can taunt a ghost and survive is Zach Bagans.
Yeah, apparently so.
So I'm sorry that Rachel still has those dreams, especially
that's
if you wake
so
up
scary.
Sobbing. That's so jarring and emotional.
Yeah. Yes. I hope Rachel can find a way to work through that. Maybe talking with somebody with experience in that kind of stuff would help, or a therapist.
Yeah. get a medium to take you back to the cemetery and be like, get out of me. Stay here. I'm going to go home. You stay here. Please don't come visit me. We're good.
I'm going to Waffle House. You stay here.
And then if it's like, oh, Waffle House, I'll stay. That's all.
First of all, don't besmirch the good name of Waffle House.
Yeah, you need to exorcise this demon because it sounds like it's got a bad attitude is all I'm saying. But it sounds like y'all were just out having fun, and that must be terrifying whenever you look over and your friend's like, I'm fine. And you're like, you're messing with me, right? And it's like, yeah. No.
Again, this sounds very much like stuff I would have gotten up to in my younger days. Younger days, I'd do it now if given the opportunity.
When are we going to the pipe?
You tell me.
Let's go right now.
I'm ready to go. Okay, stop recording.
Stop the show. We have two more stories and then we'll go to the pipe.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Nicole, very much. Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here. And if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.
This next one's from Allie, and the subject line is generational mysticism. Just a content warning, this story contains a brief mention of suicide. Longtime listener, first-time caller. I recently had a pretty weird experience with my mother, which sparked an entire conversation about other experiences the two of us have had separately. I'm not sure if it's psychic abilities, the shining, whatever you want to call it, is hereditary, but given the stories I'm about to share, I'm starting to wonder if that's the case. The first story is my mother's. It happened when I was around 5 or 6, and she had just married my ex-stepfather, who moved us from our home in the Pacific Northwest to where he grew up, in a town in the Corn Belt in Missouri with a population of 500. One night after I'd gone to bed, my stepdad, who we'll call Tom, wanted to take my mom on a walk around town and tell her about his childhood, the places he spent time as a kid, the stomping grounds where he spent his days as an unruly child, the kind of stuff you show your partner when you take him to your hometown for the first time. A few blocks away from his childhood home, he stopped and longingly stared at an old rundown shack of a house that looked like it had been condemned for about a decade, but he didn't say anything to her about it. Even without context, my mom pointed to the magnificent tree in the front yard and said, "Who died there? Was it David?" My stepfather was shocked as he had never spoken to her about the incident that took place in that house. He confirmed that a man named David had, in fact, hung himself there. His twin sons came to live with Tom and his family for a while afterwards, but never having any answers as to why their father chose to leave them kind of pushed them down a road of drug and alcohol abuse. My mom walked straight over to the tree, pointed to the ground below, and said, "Dig about 6 inches down in that spot. It wasn't a suicide." Sure enough, Tom started to dig, and about 6 inches down, he found a piece of rope and a pocket knife with someone else's initials engraved into it. My mom didn't recognize the initials, but Tom did. After telling the twins about what my mom had found, the three of them, now grown up, were able to put some previously missing pieces together and finally found the answers they needed to move past their father's death. My second story is one that happened to me about a decade ago. Tom eventually joined the military and moved our now family of 5 to Germany, right in the countryside of Bavaria. On the post we lived on, there was an abandoned train station that the base officials locked up and occasionally used for storage. My friends and every other teenager on post would break in through a tiny hole in the boarded up and locked doorway to hang out in the basement. Allegedly, of course, I'm not admitting to B&E on a podcast. At one point, some heavy stuff went down with my parents that left me and my siblings in the care of a family friend with a 2-year-old. In an attempt to distract me from the trauma going on at home, the family friend, we'll call her Sarah, let me invite 2 of my friends over for a Harry Potter viewing party. I invited a brother and sister to Sarah's for the night. We made some popcorn and sat down to have our marathon. About halfway through the Sorcerer's Stone, Sarah's 2-year-old woke up screaming. She went to check and found 3 long scratches down her back that hadn't been there when she put her down to sleep. Sarah's house had been known as haunted since she moved in, but the resident specter had never caused any issues, so she never tried to get rid of it. Harming her child was her boiling point, though, and she suggested we banish it. As a self-proclaimed emo kid and lover of all things creepy, I jumped at the chance to perform a séance as she suggested. This included us sitting in a circle around her dining room table, linking hands and lighting a candle in front of her. She gave me specific instructions that should the candle flame lean toward her, I should put my hand over her cross and hold on to it. Well, lo and behold, the flame grew in size and leaned in her direction. I did as I was told and grabbed the cross around her neck, and the next thing I knew, I came to in the middle of Prisoner of Azkaban. I don't remember anything after grabbing the cross, but was told the following by Sarah and my friends who were present. Apparently, after grabbing the cross, I started to speak in a voice that wasn't my own, saying things like, "Oh, what a lovely necklace. I'm so glad you're one amongst the flock." And, "I know the times are dark, but God's light is going to guide us through." Which is weird considering I am not and have never been religious in any way. Sufficiently freaked out, Sarah asked me who I was and where I came from. And all I would say was, "I live in the train station basement, but God told me I was needed here. Don't worry, I'll make the tall man go away." And then I went basically catatonic until I came to on the couch. Sarah never had another experience in that house again. The third story is the experience that I just had about a week ago, and I have no real explanation for it. When I was around 17, about 10 years ago, I did a past life regression meditation, and the only real information I got from it was that I had been a woman in the 1890s who lived in a large home. Not very much, but the imagery stuck with me. I never told my mom about this until one night we were driving around to drop off DoorDash deliveries when the topic of past lives came up. I explained what I had seen during the meditation, and she took a deep breath and said, "Does the name Harmonious mean anything to you?" Just like that, something in me snapped and I started to bawl. I had no idea why I was crying, but something deep and primal inside of me just felt so much despair at the sound of that name. I said, "I don't know why, but yeah." As I said it, I saw a first-person vision of myself being held by the arms and sobbing, "No, stop," in front of me, barely lit by a lantern, and there was a man beating somebody on the ground over and over. And just as quickly as it came, the vision went. I still didn't say anything to my mom about it, but she still turned to look at me and proceeded to say, "He was your soulmate. Your husband found out about the two of you, murdered him while you watched, and then went after you." I said, "I know," because while I didn't visualize the whole thing, something inside of me did in fact know. She then went on to explain that my husband had followed me through lifetimes and always faces some type of cosmic punishment for what he does to me in these circumstances. Before I could put two and two together, I was struck by a memory of a previous relationship, the big one that really broke me. The only time I ever even thought that my ex was going to hit me was after a bout of emotionally abusive vitriol being hurled at me. I simply told them, "Go to hell," and I saw something behind their eyes that completely surpassed anger. My mother had never known how truly bad things got in that relationship, had never known about that particular argument, but we both came to the same conclusion that my ex was in my soul pod throughout my lifetimes and was my husband in the 1890s. I guess I do find some comfort in the idea that I am their reckoning and will continue to be until they learn the lessons they're put here to learn. I know this was a lengthy one, but thank you so much for reading it. My mom and I are big fans of the show and switch back and forth between you guys and That's Why We Drink when we drive around working at all hours. Thank you guys so much for the endless entertainment of paranormal stories and the genuine care you give to the true crime side of things.
I have never heard of soul pods, and I'm very interested in this concept.
I agree. I know somebody who did a past life regression, and I'm interested in the whole thing, but the idea of soul pod, I'm like, I gotta Google this.
I gotta Google it right now. I should have Googled it earlier. What my guess would be that the idea is throughout our different lifetimes, there are certain people that stick with us in various forms and
maybe
then
so.
Manifest in different ways. And then I guess if you fucked up and you're still in that soul pod, you're going to pay the piper every time it comes back around.
Like, hey, get your fucking attitude right. You've had like six goes at this. Like, what are you doing? Just get it right.
From ABC News, which is, I'm very shocked this is the first hit. Finding your soul pod Let's
That's
see.
A reality show I would watch. First
Finding
of all.
Your soul pod. Oh, 100%. Our soul pod is that person or group of people whom our soul finds the most resonance with at any given moment. People of, well, there's a portmanteau. Do you want to guess what it is?
No, I can't. I can't even.
Soulnificence.
Never would have got it.
No, wait, I'm sorry. I mispronounced it. Soulnificence.
No.
Significance. Soulnificence. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good. Pretty good. Pretty good. So, yeah, that's an interesting concept. And I love a mom who's like, yeah, that's because this happened. Doesn't try and dismiss it or think that you're like being silly or just, you know, oh, that's just Allie and her woo-woo stuff. She's like, no, yeah, that was your husband and blah, blah. I mean,
it's like they know what they're talking about.
You go
about.
Hard together, you and your mom.
I know, right? And especially mom being like walking by a tree and knowing like the name
God,
of the person
and
the not the entire backstory, but like just enough information of like, I know it's not that. I know you need to look there. What else, what you'll find, I don't know. That's stuff like that where you just listen to that intuition. I think that may be what, you know, what we consider psychic, like what these visions you're feeling may just be like extreme intuition or extreme intuitions. Actually, we're psychic.
In this case, too, the fact that it was able to put some family grief to rest and maybe answer some questions, that I love that, you know,
yeah.
I mean, however it came about, you got some much needed answers, it sounds like, and I'm sure that that family is forever grateful for that as well.
Yeah, trying to give them some peace. But, well, it sounds like listen to mama in general, but especially if your mom's a psychic, then super listen to her.
And it sounds like it was passed on to you. So then if you also have a kid, I already know you'll listen to them because it's clearly in your bloodline to not dismiss these things and to lean into them, see what something's trying to tell you.
Yeah, listen to the message. Well, thank you, Allie.
Also, shout out to our besties from And That's Why We Drink. We
love
y'all.
Yeah.
And so we love when people find us through them because we love them so much too.
Yeah, someone's like, oh, my two favorite podcasts. I was like, well, that one's my favorite podcast. So, so we have something in common.
Good company to keep.
Absolutely. Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Final one is from Owl's mom, and the subject line is Pipe of Terror. And she writes, hello, Sinisterhood. When I was 10 or so, I was super excited to go on my first Girl Scout camping trip in the US of A. My expectations were high. I had gone camping in Germany with the Pathfinders, the German version of Scouts, and had loved it. We were all sleeping in the big mess hall as it was just our troop and maybe one other for 2 nights, if I recall correctly. Maybe 10 to 15 girls. The bathroom was down the hill from the mess hall. I use that word loosely because it was a shed-like building, and in the middle of it, there was what looked like a giant pipe sticking up, the toilet seat on it. When you went pee or poo, it took a while to hit what was underneath. Gross and creepy. My grandparents had an outhouse, and I've used other outhouses camping and shit before. This was worse. Literally a pipe in the center of the room with a toilet seat on it. Night comes, and I and my three newly made friends have to go to the bathroom. I had to shit. I had to shit so bad, I was convinced my butt was going to explode off. My friends and I made a little huddle and gathered around the flashlight as we dared to make our way down to the bathroom. The woods were towered and rustled over us. Our flashlight cast shadows, and we were all beside ourselves with anxiety by the time we made it to the shed bathroom. Despite feeling like a ticking time bomb, I let the other three girls go first because I was worried I would take too long or stink up the bathroom shed too much. Finally, it was my turn. I sat upon the pipe of terror and was barely squeezing out my shit when suddenly there was a horrifying, echoey screech that came from the woods. It sounded to me like the scream of a woman. I let the rest of my shit slide out of me in a panic. I couldn't move due to the terror. I heard the other girls outside go silent, like me, when the screech happened. I couldn't breathe. Had that been close or far away? Suddenly, I heard those three assholes who were supposed to be my friends make a fucking run for it. So there I was, stuck on the throne of terror, friendless and haunted by the screech that had just rippled through the forest. My stomach was a knot of dread. I was sweating in pain, sweating in terror. My legs wouldn't move. I was terrified something was out there and that had just murdered a woman in the woods. I was worried a raccoon would jump up the pipe and bite my ass. Abandoned, I had to make a choice. Possible toilet monster or woods monster. I got up with frozen legs, hurriedly cleaned myself, and pulled up my PJs with my stiff but shaking hands, and then sprinted blindly toward the mess hall. My friends were already there, now giggling how silly they had been and how there was nothing out there. They said they must have freaked themselves out. I ignored them. They had left me in the clutches of the unknown. They were not friends. I went to my sleeping bag and crawled into it and curled into a ball and waited for this damn disappointment of a trip to be over. I did not hear the screech at the camp again the next night, but refused to go to the bathroom at night again. To my knowledge, there was no crime reported. There were no cryptids found, only false friends and disappointment. Needless to say, I did not keep those friends, and I never went camping with the Girl Scouts again. It wasn't until years later that I realized it was probably a deer or a moose that had screamed in the woods that night. Deer being more likely, since moose only show up rarely in the area of the Adirondacks our camp was in. Or a vixen. They have scary screams, too. The camp still exists. It's called Camp Trefoil in Harrisville, New York. I hope they updated the toilet. From the looks of the pictures I found online, it looks about the same. I have no photos of this camping trip. My mom said I didn't take any because I hated it. And that tracks. Hope this gives you a little laugh. Stay freaky, Owl's mom.
I have a pipe from my younger days, too, but it wasn't something everybody shit into. It was something everybody stood around or sat on and smoked weed. So this pipe sounds way worse.
Anything where you might could go into it, or like you could be sucked in or something could come out of it. I don't want to sit on it.
Porter potties are like outhouses in general. It's a lot to unpack what is going on down there. And the weight, it's like dropping a pebble down a well to see how deep it is.
And you're like, well, if I fall down there, or like it's suddenly I become like something's going to come out. My watch is going to fall off, even though it's fully attached to me. You know what I mean? Like I start being paranoid of what could fall. But after I saw a sleepaway camp where someone gets murdered and stuffed into a camp outhouse toilet, it forever ruined these things for me. But that was just like a wooden shed thing, not a fucking pipe.
No.
Dude.
Yeah. It's. At least they put the seat on it so you didn't have to sit on the pipe. Because I imagine, to me, the pipe is like this round.
Yeah.
Is that
I figured it was like, I thought you could like fit in it, that it was like toilet seat size.
Oh, I was thinking much smaller. So Al's mom, we need some clarification on the size of this pipe. What was the circumference?
Please.
Could you have fallen down it?
Yeah, I need a pipe diameter
drawing. Would it have been like you have to position yourself to aim really well because it wasn't big enough to fit in? Or option three, which I don't know. But
I hate that they're like, you're 10. Just go out there in the night by yourself. You're good.
Go into that gross ass outhouse and just camps for kids. You got to have some decent bathrooms. That's one thing you got to invest in.
Mm-hmm. I'm not as much anymore, but when I was a kid, the times that I would have to be like, you know, you wake yourself up and almost freak yourself out. And now you're like, oh my God, I have to go to the bathroom now. And it's going to happen. If you have a bunch of kids all together, they're going to get up in the night. So better not to let them traipse around outdoors.
Didn't you also have a pipe in your backyard that you shit in?
Oh, yeah, I did. That was early on. My mom said before I was potty trained, I was housebroken because I would just pull my diaper off and go shit down the pipe in the backyard.
Maybe
which
you'd like
you're
this
welcome.
In.
Yeah, you're welcome, guys. It was that one was small. It was about yay big. It wasn't like it was like the size of like a big Yeti cup. Like it, I mean, it went all the way
down
to the
street. That's what I'm kind of envisioning this is. But goddamn, if it's a person sized pipe that you could fall down, then this is even more scary and haunting than I originally thought.
Yeah, that's my own fears and terrors in my head. But Al's mom, we eagerly await your drawing, your diagram and design.
Draw it for us.
I Googled this camp. I couldn't specifically find pictures of the toilet. But anyone in Harrisville, New York, if you or the surrounding areas, if you've been there and you know about the Pipe of Terror, please let us know.
Yeah.
And as for what screamed in the woods, maybe it was whatever's on the other end of that pipe. Ooh. And you were shitting on it. And it was like, no.
You heard the echoes come up through the pipe. Shit does just scream out in the woods, though. Like, I get usually it's animals, but the amount of TikToks I've seen of moose screaming or something,
foxes.
Or foxes, if you didn't know those animals made that sound, you would think somebody was being brutally murdered in the woods.
A fox is always like, are you okay? Because the fox is just like, ah! So, yeah, it does sound like a full attack for sure. So, goddamn, Al's mom. Well, send us your drawing for sure.
Yeah, please send us a drawing. We'll make sure to post it on socials when we do.
Thank you so very much for sending in your Freaky Friday stories. If you have an odd but true story, maybe you've encountered Bigfoot, you've seen a UFO, you had a brush with true crime, or you felt the presence of an otherworldly being, please send them in at sinister.com/Freaky Friday. And if you got something freaky, like a creepy clip, weird, unexplainable clip, like a man sunning his taint in the driveway, maybe you just have a funny video you want us to see, like a robot falling down while it's dancing, please send it our way and we will live react to it during Sunday Scaries, our weekly live stream over on Patreon every Sunday, 8:30 p.m. Central. It's free. You just put in your email and do it. This Sunday, July 5th, we're not going to be doing it because we're off having a little holiday, and we hope you are as well. But we'll be back July 12th, so tune in 8:30 p.m. Central, totally free. If you like our free episodes, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free to see what we're up to next, or dive into over 1,000 hours of bonus content like Judge Christie, where she rules on petty grievances. You bring before the court true crime headlines, where we break down the latest news in true crime. Heather Saves, the annals of the World Wide Web, I'll bring them to you, as well as Am I the Asshole, Unpopular Opinions, and other subreddits we feel require our input. We also have free trials where you join for a week, check out all the perks, and cancel anytime before the trial is over without getting charged. Stick around though, get an annual membership, you get one whole month free, and you get ad-free episodes all year long, as well as monthly live stream Q&As, quarterly live bonus content, weekly audio bonus content, monthly mini-sodes, merch discounts, and a community of the best listeners on the whole internet. You all are truly, truly the best perk of Patreon, is getting to hang out and chat with all of you. Thank you so much for being there. Head over to sinister.com and click shop on the top banner to check out merch like t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos. And while you're on our website, review the show, submit topics for cases you'd like to see covered, and find things like topic-based playlists, and most importantly, tickets for Crime Wave at Sea 2027, February 8th through 12th on the high seas. Join us and your favorite true crime creators. Go to crimewaveatsea.com/sinister or go to our website for more information. You can follow us on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Follow us over on YouTube and TikTok at Sinisterhood Podcast to watch clips from the episodes, live streams, and more. And if you're looking for a unique and personal gift for the Sinisterhood fan in your life, or you want to treat yourself to a pep talk, get you a Cameo now. No matter what you're celebrating, we want to celebrate with you. Go to cameo.com/sinisterhood. We will create a customized video that can be immediately viewed and sent. It's thoughtful. You don't have to leave the house. It takes like 3 clicks to order it. And we can't wait to celebrate with you. cameo.com/sinisterhood. As always, the devil rules the airwaves. Keep it creepy.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.